Book 8th. Retrospect, Love of Nature Leading to Love of Mankind. What sounds are those, Helvellyn, which are heard up to thy summit, through the depth of air ascending as if distance had the power to make the sounds more audible? What crowd is yon, assembled in the gay green field? Crowd seems it, solitary hill, to thee, though but a little family of men, twice 20, with their children and their wives, and here and there a stranger interspersed. It is a summer festival, a fair, such as, on this side now, and now on that, repeated through his tributary vales, Helvellyn in the silence of his rest sees annually, if storms be not abroad and mists have left him, an unshrouded head. Delightful day it is for all who dwell in this secluded glen, and eagerly they give it welcome. Long ere heat of noon, behold the cattle are driven down. The sheep that have for traffic been culled out, are penned in cotes that stand together on the plain ranged side by side. The chaffering is begun. The heifer lows, uneasy at the voice of a new master. Bleat the flocks aloud. Booths are there none. A stool or two is here, a lame man or a blind, the one to beg, the other to make music. Hitherto from far, with baskets slung upon her arm of hawker's wares, books, pictures, combs, and pins, some aged woman finds her way again, year after year a punctual visitant. The showman with his freight upon his back, and once perchance in lapse of many years prouder itinerant, mountebank, or he whose wonders in a covered wain lie hid. But one is here, the loveliest of them all, some sweet lass of the valley, looking out for gains, and who that sees her would not buy? Fruits of her father's orchard, apples, pears, on that day only to such office stooping, she carries in her basket, and walks round among the crowd, half pleased with, half ashamed of her new cooling, blushing restlessly. The children now are rich, the old man now is generous, so gaiety prevails, which all partake of, young and old. Immense is the recess, the circumambient world magnificent, by which they are embraced. They move out upon the soft green field. How little they and their doings, seem. Their herds and flocks about them, they themselves, and all which they can further or obstruct. Through utter weakness pitiably dear as tender infants are, and yet how great. For all things serve them, them the morning light loves as it glistens on the silent rocks, and them the silent rocks, which now from high look down upon them, the reposing clouds, the lurking brooks from their invisible haunts, and old Helvellyn, conscious of the stir, and the blue sky that roofs their calm abode. With deep devotion, nature, did I feel in that great city what I owed to thee. High thoughts of God and man, and love of man, triumphant over all those loathsome sights of wretchedness and vice, a watchful eye, which, with the outside of our human life not satisfied, must read the inner mind. For I already had been taught to love my fellow beings, to such habits trained among the woods and mountains, where I found in thee a gracious guide to lead me forth beyond the bosom of my family, my friends and youthful playmates. 'Twas thy power that raised the first complacency in me, and noticeable kindliness of heart. Love human to the creature in himself as he appeared, a stranger in my path, before my eyes a brother of this world. Thou first didst with those motions of delight inspire me.
I remember, far from home, once having strayed while yet a very child, I saw a sight, and with joy and love, it was a day of exhalation spread upon the mountains, mists and steam-like fogs, redounding everywhere, not vehement, but calm and mild, gentle and beautiful, with gleams of sunshine on the islet spots and loopholes of the hills, wherever seen, hidden by quiet process, and as soon unfolded to be huddled up again. Along a narrow valley, and profound, I journeyed, when, aloft above my head, emerging from the silvery vapours, lo, a shepherd and his dog in open day, girt round with mists, they stood and looked about, from that enclosure small, inhabitants of an aerial island floating on, as seemed, with that abode in which they were, a little pendant area of grey rocks, by the soft wind breathed forward. with delight, as bland almost, one evening I beheld, and at this early age, the spectacle is common, but by me was then first seen, a shepherd in the bottom of a vale, towards the centre standing, who with voice and hand waving to and fro as need required, gave signal to his dog, thus teaching him to chase along the mazes of steep crags the flock he could not see. And so the brute, dear creature, with a man's intelligence, advancing or retreating on his steps, through every pervious strait to right or left, frittered away unbaffled, while the flock fled upwards from the terror of his bark, through rocks and seams of turf with liquid gold irradiate, that deep farewell light by which the setting sun proclaims the love he bears to mountain regions. Beauteous the domain, where to the sense of beauty first my heart was opened, tracked more exquisitely fair than is that paradise of 10,000 trees, or Gael's famous gardens, in a clime chosen from widest empire, the delight of the Tartarian dynasty composed beyond that mighty wall, not fabulous, China's stupendous mound, by patient skill of myriads and boons nature's lavish help, scene linked to scene, and ever-growing change, soft, grand, or gay, with palaces and domes of pleasure spangled over, shady dells, for eastern monasteries, sunny mounds, with temples crested, bridges, gondolas, rocks, dens, and groves of foliage taught to melt into each other their obsequious hues, going and gone again, in subtle chase, to find to be pursued, or standing forth, in no discordant opposition, strong and gorgeous as the colours side by side, bedded among the plumes of tropic birds, and mountains over all, embracing all, and all the landscape endlessly enriched, with waters running, falling, or asleep. But lovelier far than this, the paradise where I was reared, in nature's primitive gifts, favoured no less, and more to every sense, delicious, seeing that the sun and sky, the elements and seasons in their change, do find their dearest fellow labourer there, the heart of man, a district on all sides, the fragrance breathing of humanity, man free, man working for himself, with choice, of time and place and object by his wants, his comforts, native occupations, cares, conducted onto individual ends, or social, and still followed by a train, unwooed, unthought of, even, simplicity, and beauty, and inevitable grace. Yea, doubtless at an age when but a glimpse of those resplendent gardens, with their frame imperial and elaborate ornaments, would to a child be transport over great, when but a half hour's roam through such a place would leave behind a dance of images that shall break in upon his sleep for weeks, and then the common haunts of the green earth, with the ordinary human interests, which they embosom, or without regard as both may seem, are fastening on the heart, insensibly, each with the other's help, so that we love, not knowing that we love, and feel, not knowing whence our feeling comes.
Such league have these two principles of joy in our affections. I have singled out some moments, the earliest that I could, in which their several currents blended into one, weak yet, and gathering imperceptibly, flowed in by gushes. My first human love, as has been mentioned, did incline to those whose occupations and concerns were most illustrated by nature and adorned, and shepherds were the men who pleased me first. Not such as in Arcadian fastnesses, sequestered, handed down among themselves, so ancient poets sing, the Golden Age. Nor such, a second race allied to these, as Shakespeare in the Wood of Arden placed, where Phoebe sighed for the false Ganymede, or there where Florizel and Perdita together danced, queen of the feast and king, nor such as Spenser fabled. True it is that I had heard, what he perhaps had seen, of maids at sunrise bringing in from far their maybush, and along the streets in flocks parading with a song of taunting rhymes, aimed at the laggards slumbering within doors. Had also heard, from those who yet remembered, tales of the maypole dance, and flowers that decked the posts and the kirk pillars, and of youths, that each one with his maid at break of day, by annual custom issued forth in troops, to drink the waters of some favourite well, and hang it round with garlands. This, alas, was but a dream, The times had scattered all these lighter graces, and the rural ways and manners which it was my chance to see in childhood were severe and unadorned. The unluxuriant produce of a life intent on little but substantial needs, yet beautiful, and beauty that was felt. But images of danger and distress and suffering, these took deepest hold of me. Man suffering among awful powers and forms. Of this I heard and saw enough to make the imagination restless, nor was free myself from frequent perils. Nor were tales wanting. The tragedies of former times, or hazards and escapes, which in my walks I carried with me among crags and woods and mountains. And of these may here be told one, as recorded by my household dame. At the first falling of autumnal snow, a shepherd and his son one day went forth, thus did the matron's tale begin, to seek a straggler of their flock. They both had ranged upon this service the preceding day, all over their own pastures and beyond, and now at sunrise sallying out again renewed their search, begun where, from Dovecrag, ill home for birds so gentle, they looked down on Deepdale Head and Brothers Water, named from those two brothers that were drowned therein. Thence northward, having passed by Arthur's Seat, to Fairfield's highest summit, on the right leaving St. Sunday's Pike, to Greasdale Tarn they shot, and over that cloud-loving hill Seat Sandal, a fond lover of the clouds, thence up Helvellyn, a superior mount with prospect underneath of Striding Edge and Greasdale's houseless vale, along the brink of Russet Cove and those two other coves, huge skeletons of crags, which from the trunk of old Helvellyn spread their arms abroad and made a stormy harbour for the winds. Far went those shepherds in their devious quest, from mountain ridges peeping as they passed down into every glen. At length the boy said, "Father, with your leave I will go back and range the ground which we have searched before." So speaking, southward down the hill the lad sprang like a gust of wind, crying aloud, "I know where I shall find him."
"For take note," said here my grey-haired dame, "that though the storm drive one of these poor creatures miles and miles, if he can crawl he will return again to his own hills, the spots where, when a lamb has learnt to pasture at his mother's side. After so long a labour, suddenly bethinking him of this, the boy pursued his way towards a brook whose course was through that unfenced tract of mountain ground which to his father's little farm belonged, the home and ancient birthright of their flock. Down the deep channel of the stream he went, prying through every nook. Meanwhile the rain began to fall upon the mountain tops, thick storm and heavy, which for 3 hours' space abated not. And all that time the boy was busy in his search, until at length he spied the sheep upon a plot of grass, an island in the brook. It was a place remote and deep, piled round with rocks where foot of man or beast was seldom used to tread. But now, when everywhere the summer grass had failed, this one adventurer, hunger-pressed, had left his fellows and made his way alone to the green plot of pasture in the brook. Before the boy knew well what he had seen, he leapt upon the island with proud heart and with a prophet's joy. Immediately the sheep sprang forward to the further shore and was borne headlong by the roaring flood. At this the boy looked round him, and his heart fainted with fear. Thrice did he turn his face to either brink, nor could he summon up the courage that was needful to leap back across the tempestuous torrent. So he stood, a prisoner on the island, not without more than one thought of death and his last hour. Meanwhile, the father had returned alone to his own house, and now at the approach of evening he went forth to meet his son, conjecturing vainly for what cause the boy had stayed so long. The shepherd took his way up his own mountain grounds, where as he walked along the steep that overhung the brook, he seemed to hear a voice, which was again repeated, like the whistling of a kite. At this, not knowing why, as oftentimes long afterwards he has been heard to say, down to the brook he went, and tracked its course upwards among the o'erhanging rocks. Nor thus had he gone far ere he espied the boy, where on that little plot of ground he stood, right in the middle of the roaring stream, now stronger every moment and more fierce. The sight was such as no one could have seen without distress and fear. The shepherd heard the outcry of his son. He stretched his staff towards him, bade him leap, which words scarce said, the boy was safe within his father's arms. Smooth life had flock and shepherd in old time. Long springs and tepid winters on the banks of delicate Galesus, and no less those scattered along Adria's myrtle shores. Smooth life the herdsman and his snow-white herd to triumphs and to sacrificial rites devoted on the inviolable stream of rich Clitumnus, and the goat-herd lived as sweetly underneath the pleasant brows of cool Lucretilus, where the pipe was heard of Pan, the invisible god, thrilling the rocks with tutelary music, from all harm the fold protecting. I myself, mature in manhood then, have seen a pastoral tract, like one of these, where fancy might run wild through under skies less generous and serene. Yet there, as for herself, had nature framed a pleasure ground, diffused a fair expanse of level pasture, islanded with groves and banked with woody risings, but the plain endless, here opening widely out, and there shut up in lesser lakes or beds of lawn, and intricate recesses, creek or bay sheltered within a shelter, where at large the shepherd strays, a rolling hut his home. Thither he comes with springtime, there abides all summer, and at sunrise ye may hear his flute or flageolet resounding far. There's not a nook or hold of that vast space, nor strait where passage is, but it shall have in turn its visitant, telling there his hours in unlaborious pleasure, with no task more toilsome than to carve a beechen bowl for spring or fountain, which the traveller finds when through the region he pursues at will his devious course. A glimpse of such sweet life I saw when from the melancholy walls of Goslar, once imperial, I renewed my daily walk along that cheerful plain, which, reaching to her gates, spreads east and west and northwards from beneath the mountainous verge of the Hesarian forest. Yet, hail to you, your rocks and precipices, ye that seize the heart with firmer grasp, your snows and streams ungovernable, and your terrifying winds that howl so dismally when I have been companionless among your solitudes. There 'tis the shepherd's task the winter long to wait upon the storms. Of their approach sagacious, from the height he drives his flock down into sheltering coves, and feeds them there through the hard time. Long as the storm is locked, so do they phrase it, bearing from the stools a toilsome burden up the craggy ways to strew it on the snow. And when the spring looks out, and all the mountains dance with lambs, he through the enclosures won from the steep waste, and through the lower heights hath gone his rounds. And when the flock with warmer weather climbs higher and higher, him his office leads to range among them, through the hills dispersed, and watch their goings, whatsoever track each wanderer chooses for itself, a work that lasts the summer through. He quits his home at dayspring, and no sooner does the sun begin to strike him with a fire-like heat than he lies down upon some shining place and breakfasts with his dog. When he has stayed, as for the most he does, beyond his time, he springs up with a bound and then away, ascending fast with his long pole in hand, or winding in and out among the crags.
What need to follow him through what he does or sees in his day's march? He feels himself, in those vast regions where his service is, a freeman, wedded to his life of hope and hazard, and hard labour interchanged with that majestic indolence so dear to native man. A rambling schoolboy, thus have I beheld him, without knowing why I have felt his presence in his own domain as of a lord and master, or a power, or genius, under nature, under God presiding. And severest solitude seemed more commanding oft when he was there. Seeking the raven's nest, and suddenly surprised with vapours, or on rainy days when I have angled up the lonely brooks, mine eyes have glanced upon him few steps off, in size a giant, stalking through the fog, his sheep like Greenland bears. At other times, when round some shady promontory turning, his form hath flushed upon me, glorified by the deep radiance of the setting sun, or him have I descried in distance, sky a solitary object, and sublime above all height, like an aerial cross as it is stationed on some spiry rock of the Chartreuse for worship. Thus was man ennobled outwardly before mine eyes, and thus my heart at first was introduced to an unconscious love and reverence of human nature. Hence the human form to me was like an index of delight, of grace and honour, power and worthiness. Meanwhile this creature, spiritual almost as those of books, but more exalted far, far more of an imaginative form, was not a Corin of the groves, who lives for his own fancies, or to dance by the hour in Coronor with Phyllis in the midst, but, for the purposes of kind, a man with the most common, husband, father, learnt, could teach, admonish, suffered with the rest from vice and folly, wretchedness and fear. Of this I little saw, cared less for it, but something must have felt. Call ye these appearances which I beheld of shepherds in my youth, this sanctity of nature given to man, a shadow, a delusion, ye who are fed by the dead letter, not the spirit of things, whose truth is not a motion or a shape instinct with vital functions, but a block or waxen image which yourselves have made and ye adore. But blessed be the God of nature and of man that this was so, that men did at first present themselves before my untaught eyes thus purified, removed, and at a distance that was fit. And so we all of us in some degree are led to knowledge, whensoever led and howsoever, were it otherwise, and we found evil fast as we find good in our first years, or think that it is found. How could the innocent heart bear up and live? But doubly fortunate my lot, not here alone, that something of a better life perhaps was round me than it is the privilege of most to move in, but that first I looked at man through objects that were great and fair, first communed with him by their help, and thus was founded a sure safeguard and defence against the weight of meanness, selfish cares, coarse manners, vulgar passions, that beat in on all sides from the ordinary world in which we traffic. Starting from this point, I had my face towards the truth, began with an advantage, furnished with that kind of prepossession without which the soul receives no knowledge that can bring forth good, no genuine insight ever comes to her. Happy in this, that I with nature walked, not having a too early intercourse with the deformities of crowded life, and those ensuing laughters and contempt self-pleasing, which if we would wish to think with admiration and respect of man will not permit us, but pursue the mind that to devotion willingly would be raised, into the temple and the temple's heart.
Yet do not deem, my friend, though thus I speak of man as having taken in my mind a place thus early, which might almost seem preeminent, that this was really so. Nature herself was at this unripe time but secondary to my own pursuits and animal activities, and all their trivial pleasures, and long afterwards, when those had died away, and nature did for her own sake become my joy, even then, and upwards through late youth until not less than 23 summers had been told, was man in my affections and regards subordinate to her, her awful forms and viewless agencies, a passion she, a rapture often, and immediate joy ever at hand, he, distant, but a grace occasional, an accidental thought, his hour being not yet come. Far less had then the inferior creatures, beast or bird, attuned my spirit to that gentleness of love, won from me those minute obeisances of tenderness which I may number now with my first blessings. Nevertheless, on these the light of beauty did not fall in vain, or grandeur circumfuse them to no end. Why should I speak of tillers of the soil? The ploughman and his team, or men and boys, in festive summer busy with the rake, old men and ruddy maids and little ones all out together, and in sun and shade dispersed among the haygrounds alder-fringed, the quarrymen far heard that blast the rocks, the fishermen in pairs, the one to row and one to drop the net, plying their trade mid tossing lakes and tumbling boats, and winds whistling, the miner, melancholy man, that works by taper light while all the hills are shining with the glory of the day. But when that first poetic faculty, of plain imagination and severe, no longer a mute influence of the soul, an element of the nature's inner self, began to have some promptings to put on a visible shape, and to the works of art, the notions and the images of books, did knowingly conform itself, by these inflamed and proud of that her new delight, there came among these shapes of human life a wilfulness of fancy and conceit, which gave them new importance to the mind. And nature and her objects beautified these fictions as, in some sort, in their turn they burnished her. From touch of this new power, nothing was safe. The elder tree that grew beside the well-known charnel house had then a dismal look. The yew tree had its ghost that took its station there for ornament. Then common death was none, common mishap, but matter for this humour everywhere, the tragic, super-tragic, else left short. Then, if a widow, staggering with the blow of her distress, was known to have made her way to the cold grave in which her husband slept one night, or haply more than one, through pain or half-insensate impotence of mind, the fact was caught at greedily, and there she was, a visitant the whole year through, wetting the turf with never-ending tears, and all the storms of heaven must beat on her. Through wild obliquities could I pursue among all objects of the fields and groves these cravings, when the foxglove, one by one, upwards through every stage of its tall stem, had shed its bells and stood by the wayside dismantled, with a single one, perhaps, left at the ladder's top, with which the plant appeared to stoop, as slender blades of grass tipped with a bead of rain or dew. Behold, if such a sight were seen, would fancy bring some vagrant thither with her babes, and seat her upon the turf beneath the stately flower, drooping in sympathy, and making so a melancholy crest above the head of the lorn creature, while her little ones, all unconcerned with her unhappy plight, were sporting with the purple cups that lay scattered upon the ground.
There was a copse, an upright bank of wood and woody rock, that opposite our rural dwelling stood, in which a sparkling patch of diamond light was in bright weather duly to be seen on summer afternoons, within the wood at the same place. 'Twas doubtless nothing more than a black rock, which, wet with constant springs, glistered far seen from out its lurking place, as soon as ever the declining sun had smitten it. Beside our cottage hearth, sitting with open door, 100 times upon this lustre have I gazed, that seemed to have some meaning which I could not find. And now it was a burnished shield, I fancied, suspended over a knight's tomb who lay inglorious, buried in the dusky wood. An entrance now into some magic cave, or palace for a fairy of the rock. Nor would I, though not certain whence the cause of the effulgence, thither have repaired without a precious bribe. And day by day, and month by month, I saw the spectacle, nor ever once have visited the spot unto this hour. Thus sometimes were the shapes of wilful fancy grafted upon feelings of the imagination, and they rose in worth accordingly. My present theme is to retrace the way that led me on through nature to the love of humankind. Nor could I, with such object, overlook the influence of this power, which turned itself instinctively to human passions, things least understood, of this adulterate power, for so it may be called, and without wrong, when with that first compared. Yet in the midst of these vagaries, with an eye so rich as mine, through the chance, on me not wasted, of having been brought up in such a grand and lovely region, I had forms distinct to steady me. These thoughts did oft revolve about some centre palpable, which at once incited them to motion and controlled, and whatsoever shape the fit might take, and whencesoever it might come, I still at all times had a real solid world of images about me, did not pine, as one in cities bred might do, as thou, beloved friend, hast told me that thou didst, great spirit as thou art, in endless dreams of sickliness, disjoining, joining things, without the light of knowledge. Where the harm, if, when the woodman languished with disease, from sleeping night by night among the woods within his sod-built cabin, Indian-wise, I called the pangs of disappointed love, and all the long etc. of such thought, to help him to his grave. Meanwhile the man, if not already from the woods retired to die at home, was haply, as I knew, pining alone among the gentle airs, birds, running streams, and hills so beautiful on golden evenings, while the charcoal pile breathed up its smoke, an image of his ghost, or spirit that would soon to take its flight. There came a time of greater dignity, which had been gradually prepared and now rushed in as if on wings, the time in which the pulse of being everywhere was felt, when all the several frames of things, like stars, through every magnitude distinguishable, were half confounded in each other's blaze, one galaxy of life and joy. Then rose man, inwardly contemplated and present in my own being, to a loftier height, as of all visible natures crowned, and first in capability of feeling what was to be felt, in being rapt away by the divine effect of power and love, as, more than anything we know, instinct with Godhead, and by reason and by will acknowledging dependency sublime.
Ere long, transported hence as in a dream, I found myself begirt with temporal shapes, of vice and folly thrust upon my view, objects of sport and ridicule and scorn, manners and characters discriminate, and little busy passions that eclipsed, as well they might, the impersonated thought, the idea or abstraction of the kind, an idler among academic bowers. Such was my new condition, as at large has been set forth. Yet here the vulgar light of present, actual, superficial life, gleaming through colouring of other times, old usages and local privileges, thereby was softened, almost solemnised, and rendered apt and pleasing to the view. This notwithstanding, being brought more near, as I was now, to guilt and wretchedness, I trembled, thought of human life at times with an indefinite terror and dismay, such as the storms and angry elements had bred in me, but gloomier far, a dim analogy to uproar and misrule, disquiet, danger and obscurity. It might be told, but wherefore speak of things common to all, that, seeing I essayed to give relief, began to deem myself a moral agent, judging between good and evil, not as for the mind's delight, but for her safety, one who was to act, as sometimes, to the best of my weak means, I did, by human sympathy impelled, and through dislike and most offensive pain, was to the truth conducted, of this faith never forsaken, that by acting well and understanding I should learn to love, the end of life and everything we know. Preceptress stern that did instruct me next, London, to thee I willingly return. Erewhile my verse played only with the flowers and wrought upon thy mantle, satisfied with this amusement, and her simple look of childlike inquisition now and then, cast upwards on thine eye to puzzle out some inner meanings which might harbour there. Yet did I not give way to this light mood wholly beguiled, as one incapable of higher things, and ignorant that high things were round me? Never shall I forget the hour, the moment, rather say, when, having thridded the labyrinth of suburban villages, at length I did unto myself first seem to enter the great city. On the roof of an itinerant vehicle I sat, with vulgar men about me, vulgar forms of houses, pavements, streets of men and things, mean shapes on every side. But at the time, when to myself it fairly might be said, the very moment that I seemed to know, the threshold is now is overpassed, great God, that aught external to the living mind should have such mighty sway, yet so it was. A weight of ages did at once descend upon my heart. No thought embodied, no distinct remembrances, but weight and power, power growing with the weight. Alas, I feel that I'm trifling. 'Twas a moment's pause. All that took place within me came and went as in a moment, and I only now remember that it was a thing divine. As when a traveller has from open day with torches passed into some vault of earth, the grotto of Antiparos, or the den of Iordas among Craven's mountain tracts, he looks and sees the cavern spread and grow, widening itself on all sides, sees, or thinks he sees, ere long the roof above his head, which instantly unsettles and recedes, substance and shadow, light and darkness, all commingled, making up a canopy of shapes and forms and tendencies to shape, that shift and vanish, change and interchange like spectres, ferment quiet and sublime, which, after a short space, works less and less, till every effort, every motion gone, the scene before him lies in perfect view, exposed and lifeless as a written book. But let him pause a while and look again, and a new quickening shall succeed, at first beginning timidly, then creeping fast through all which he beholds. The senseless mass, in its projections, wrinkles, cavities, through all its surface, with all colours streaming, like a magician's airy pageant, parts, unites, embodying everywhere some pressure or image, recognised or new, some type or picture of the world, forests and lakes, ships, rivers, towers, the warrior clad in mail, the prancing steed, the pilgrim with his staff, the mitred bishop, and the throned king, a spectacle to which there is no end. No, otherwise had I at first been moved by such a swell of feeling, followed soon by a blank sense of greatness passed away, and afterwards continued to be moved, in the presence of that vast metropolis, the fountain of my country's destiny, and of the destiny of earth itself, that great emporium, chronicle at once and burial place of passions, and their home, imperial and chief living residence. With strong sensations, teeming as it did, of past and present, such a place must needs have pleased me in those times. I sought not then knowledge, but craved for power, and power I found in all things. Nothing had a circumscribed and narrow influence, but all objects, being themselves capacious, also found in me capaciousness and amplitude of mind. Such is the strength and glory of our youth. The human nature unto which I felt that I belonged, and which I loved and reverenced, was not a punctual presence, but a spirit living in time and space, and far diffused. In this my joy, in this my dignity consisted. The external universe, by striking upon what is found within, had given me this conception, with the help of books and what they picture and record.
'Tis true, the history of my native land, with those of Greece compared and popular Rome, events not lovely nor magnanimous, but harsh and unaffecting in themselves, in our high-wrought modern narratives, stripped of their humanising soul, the life of manners and familiar incidents, had never much delighted me. And less than other minds I had been used to owe the pleasure which I found in place or thing to extrinsic transitory accidents, to records or traditions, but a sense of what had been here done and suffered here through ages, and was doing, suffering still, weighed with me, could support the test of thought, was like the enduring majesty and power of independent nature. And not seldom each individual remembrances, by working on the shapes before my eyes, became like vital functions of the soul. And out of what had been, what was, the place was thronged with impregnations, like those wilds in which my early feelings had been nursed, and naked valleys full of caverns, rocks, and audible seclusions, dashing lakes, echoes and waterfalls, and pointed crags that into music touch the passing wind. Thus, here imagination also found an element that pleased her, tried her strength among new objects, simplified, arranged, impregnated my knowledge, made it live. And the result was elevating thoughts of human nature. Neither guilt nor vice, debasement of the body or the mind, nor all the misery forced upon my sight, which was not lightly passed, but often scanned most feelingly, could overthrow my trust in what we may become, induce belief that I was ignorant, had been falsely taught, a solitary who with vain conceits had been inspired and walked about in dreams. When, from that rueful prospect overcast, and in eclipse my meditations turned, lo, everything that was indeed divine retained its purity inviolate and unencroached upon, nay, seemed brighter far for this deep shade in counterview, this gloom of opposition, such as showed itself to the eyes of Adam, yet in paradise though fallen from bliss, when in the east he saw darkness ere day's mid-course, and the morning light more orient in the western cloud, that drew o'er the blue firmament a radiant white, descending slow with something heavenly fraught.
Add also that among the multitudes of that great city oftentimes was seen, affectingly set forth, more than elsewhere is possible, the unity of man. One spirit over ignorance and vice predominant, in good and evil hearts, one sense for moral judgments, as one eye for the sun's light. When strongly breathed upon by this sensation, whencesoe'er it comes of union or communion, does the soul rejoice as in her highest joy, for there chiefly has she feeling whence she is, and passing through all natures, rests with God. And is not too that vast abiding place of human creatures, turn where'er we may, profusely sown with individual sights of courage and integrity and truth and tenderness, which, here set off by foil, appears more touching? In the tender scenes, chiefly was my delight, and one of these never will be forgotten. 'Twas a man whom I saw sitting in an open square, close to the iron paling that fenced in the spacious grass plot. On the cornerstone of the low wall in which the pales were fixed, sat this one man, and with a sickly babe upon his knee, whom he had thither brought for sunshine and to breathe the fresher air. Of those who passed, and me who looked at him, he took no note. But in his brawny arms, the artificer was to the elbow bare, and from his work this moment had been stolen. He held the child, and, bending over it, as if he were afraid both of the sun and of the air which he had come to seek, he eyed it with unutterable love. Thus were my thoughts attracted more and more by slow gradations towards humankind and to the good and ill of human life. Nature had led me on, and now I seemed to travel independent of her help, as if I had forgotten her. But no, my fellow beings still were unto me far less than she was, though the scale of love were filling fast. 'Twas light as yet compared with that in which her mighty objects lay.